cliffcentral.com.
Grant, I need to make a critical business decision. We've been expanding rapidly, and my gut feel tells me that we should be investing for growth. But I need to put some financial science behind that gut feel of mine.
Don't you have a financial manager or director that can help you with that?
But isn't that rather expensive?
It doesn't have to be. Why don't you contact the finance team? They're a consultancy that can provide you with a part-time financial manager or director at a fraction of the cost of a full-time resource.
Go to thefinanceteam.co.za.
Welcome to our Business Masterclass. I'm Richard Angus, CEO of the Finance Team, your part-time financial executive solution. Joining me in studio as part of our panel, as always, is Safia Boulay of New Habits, Making Shift Happen.
Hi, Richard.
Thanks for being with us, Safs. In this first half hour, our business skills conversation is brought to you in association with USB Ed. Last week, we spoke to Andrew Joubert on the current state of the economy in South Africa and how this affects small and medium business. Some real thought-provoking elements there. If you haven't had an opportunity to listen to that podcast, go to our website and download that. It is really worthwhile. Today's theme is all about how you go about right-sizing your business, when and how you're going to manage that expansion, and many of the elements. Joining us in studio is our guest, Kerry Boucher. Welcome,
Hi,
Kerry.
Richard, thanks.
Kerry Boucher of Think Sustainability. She's also a facilitator with USB Ed and no stranger to the studio. You've been with us a few times, so yes, thank you for joining us. So when we were thinking about this show, I just had this in the back of my mind. You know, we often talk about how you start a business and the challenges of getting a business to operate, and we often seem to have, let me call them, starting conversations and growing conversations, the pains of, let's call them, the growing pains of business, and we've talked about a number of different subjects in that space. But then, you know, this for me, there's almost, let me call it, the sign, and that sign is it's now time to expand, and I think often we get stuck in this world of, let me call it, the minutiae detail of our business, and we're so busy, you know, day to day, month to month, and let's call it the growth expansion signs are knocking at the door and we just don't seem to get them. So today's conversation was really around that expansionary kind of, let's call it, mindset and approach. Now, Kerry, you've got years of business experience across a whole range of entities. And I think for me, the reason why I invited you as the guest here is because Kerry's got a great background in the world of sustainability. And so for me, it's not just about a quick growth spurt. It's about a sustainable business that actually not only takes the next step, but continues to take the steps. So it's not just a one quick step change. It's one foot, then the other, and it's what has been come to, and many people talk of it as exponential growth as opposed to linear growth, which is, let's call it, a multiplier.
Yeah.
So, Kerry, I mean, in your experience, what are the key things that indicate to one that it's time to, let's call it, spread our wings from the nest of our single, let's call it, single unit of our business, and actually look at potentially expanding a little? What are some of those indicators that tell you it's about time to think about that?
So I think, Richard, the very first one would be you're turning business down. You've got a lot of opportunities that are coming your way, and you actually simply are actually having to say no to some customers because you actually can't take on more. So you've reached a capacity. I think the second thing is also you start recognizing that some of the skills in the business aren't where they should be.
Yeah.
So I think as you grow, part of the challenge is, you know, when you're a small business, you can maybe have a bookkeeper handling the finance, and that serves you well for a certain period of time. The challenge is at some point you need strategic assistance to say, okay, your cash flow is healthy. You've got great customers. You've got a good product. It's bedded down. You've got a lot of interest in what you're doing. And now we need to actually step up the game. And often it's not just then about, oh, let's expand our business. It's actually making sure you've got all the right resources to go with that. And that's very much the people around you, the people in your business. And also I would think, you know, a lot of small businesses don't often get like mentors that can help them on a path. Someone who's perhaps walked and expanded a business before them that would just help guide them through some basic steps of what to do now.
Yeah, and the one thing that As you mentioned that, and I'd like to just isolate the one comment you made there around mentorship, because I think people think that you need mentors when you're starting a business because you know very little. In fact, actually, you probably don't need mentors all that much when you start out, because it's you and it's your business and it's your thoughts and you can collect your ideas. But as the business starts growing and the opportunities start flourishing, the reality is you're not the expert in everything. You may be an expert in your product or your market or your service, whatever you're providing. But the reality is that mentorship actually now starts almost filling out almost like areas of expertise outside of your comfort zone, perhaps. I remember talking to Dawn Nathan Jones from the Shark Tank on one of the shows. And one thing that came to me very clearly in the whole mentorship engagement is the fact that your mentor is there to almost ground you as an entrepreneur. Yeah. And almost to give you the courage to say, hey, okay, I don't know this. You know, it's almost that safe space to admit vulnerability and say, look, I don't know this, or I'm a little shy on the detail here. And you, it's the kind of thing that you can't do when you've got employees. I mean, the boss doesn't turn around and say, look, guys, I'm the boss, I'm the CEO here, I'm the owner of the business. I actually don't know what I'm doing here on this particular issue. You know, that does not instill confidence in your employee base. No,
they might question your expansion plan at that point, yeah.
Yes. So often then the ability to reflect only happens if you've got the right type of mentor. And there again, choosing your mentor obviously becomes an entirely, we could spend a show talking about how to choose a mentor. But I think I like your point of a key part of your expansion space is finding the right mentor so that you can expand your business in a way that's controlled, measured, and I guess at the extreme, insightfully informed,
because
as opposed to by accident.
I think that reflection also would help you to look at like risks and bounce them off someone perhaps with a little bit of a different perspective. Because I think one of the things when you expand any business, you've got to understand the risks you're taking to expand or to not expand.
Mm.
And they're very different risks. You know, you've got to look at, even from the people management side, you're probably going to have different people practices as you expand your business. You might have been able to get the culture right with a few people and have a great team.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're going to move to another location and you're now appointing a manager, how do you get that same sort of value system and culture to actually get created in multiple locations? And I think those challenges are often underestimated. It's quite, you know, yes, I think the financial side, you can put a plan in place, you can say, this is what I want to do. But there's some hidden dangers sometimes that I don't think many people step back and say, how am I actually going to get this part of my business right?
Yeah.
How am I going to get customer service at the same level for each staff member when I'm not present, but I've been able to do that at this site?
Well, I think that whole concept of, let me call it, and I'm using the word carefully here, missing management. Not that you're missing, but you're just in a different location. I recall reading a book by a gentleman who was the CEO, ex-CEO of Avis, a gentleman by the name of Robert Townsend. And he wrote a book called Up the Organization, which was just short little anecdotal clips, kind of, you know, 3 or 4 pages per section on various topics and his learnings as a businessman. And I'll never forget what he wrote about operations and the location. He said, the size of the disaster is the square of the distance between you and the operation. He says, so if you want to see some fun happen, have your head office in New York and the new operation in Washington. He said, if you want to see it really get exciting, put the new operation in San Francisco. This is obviously states-based. He says, and then if you want to see pandemonium ensue, put the new operation in London. You know, the kind of the Atlantic crossing kind of idea. And I think that is so true of many businesses. You know, we're great at, let's call it, the management control by view. You know, so I'm in the same room, I'm in the same building as everybody else, and we all talk to each other all day, and the system flows and it works. Suddenly, we're not in the same building. You're actually 2 hours away by aeroplane in Cape Town.
Mm.
Now we've got to run this business together. How is that going to work?
Yeah.
And yeah, I must admit, having personally gone through some of this,
yes,
there are some significant challenges to having your business and you in different locations. And and I think there's a fallacy that success overcomes some of those challenges. Like, don't worry, you know, we're successful, we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
But it's a different set of skills
to
deal with that expansionary challenge, so to speak.
And unfortunately, some of that, you know, it might be if you don't address it, maybe it damages your reputation and that overflows back to all your customers in your original location.
Mm.
And often people don't look at things like reputation today, because it's that thing, right? On social media, I can say anything about you.
Oh, yes.
And it's your reputation can get damaged in an instant. It doesn't matter how long it took you to create it in the first place.
Yes, and unfortunately, the Twitter handle isn't at whoever in the Joburg office or in the Cape Town office. It's the business. So no matter where the disaster happens, you're accountable.
So when we speak about right-sizing, we're not always speaking about growth in the business. And when you're speaking right-sizing, it sounds from everything that you've said thus far that it's an incredibly intuitive process. So I'm kind of looking for, what's the checklist? What is the list I go through if I'm thinking about right-sizing the business? And Kerry, in your experience, technology is also starting to play a different, it's skewing the way in which you start thinking about growing and right-sizing the business. What is the impact of technology?
Well, in this process,
and please don't forget about my checklist. I need that checklist.
Okay. So let's do the technology question first and come back maybe to the checklist.
Okay.
So I think technology definitely allows companies to expand differently.
Yeah.
Whereas before, you would have had to set up a physical, you know, location if you wanted a second warehouse somewhere. Let's say you were running a little lighting business and you decided to expand. You'd need now a location in another town. You'd need staff there. Whereas now, you could put up a website, contact customers in that city and say, we'll deliver to your door. So it's a different thing, but I think the risk is it also allows players into industries that didn't exist before. And we've seen that across some very interesting industries with companies like Uber and Airbnb that are threatening spaces that I'm pretty sure if you asked the hotel groups, would an app be a threat to your business in the future? They would have looked at you and said,
are you mad?
Yeah, are you crazy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it's a fundamental shift in also what consumers are demanding versus the stuff that's always been done. It's always been done this way. So I think in your part of your expansion plan, you have to look at what is the risk, you know? Who could enter my marketplace using technology? And that might also be one of your checklists. But ultimately, I think that the checklist kind of thing is, are you turning business away? Whether it's, you know, because that might indicate it's time to actually expand.
Okay.
Are you successful financially? Do you have a strong cash flow? Are you sitting on at least probably 6 months in the current market that you've got cash in the bank to carry yourself for 6 months, even if you never sold anything? And then looking at things like governance and social aspects, are you able to, even if you're an SME, I think use some of the principles of some of the new corporate governance facilities like King 4 that talk greater than just financial metrics. So can you actually, you know, do something socially responsible for your employees, whether it's creating an education fund? Because you probably, if you're going to expand, need to upskill your employees a lot more. How are you going to go through perhaps some of that exercise around creating a value system that everyone subscribes to? A lot of small business owners would not have done that. So there's a lot of different aspects of the business you're going to have to look at to say...
So you're not giving me a checklist.
Well, it's quite hard because it's... I would guess there's not one right answer for any one business. It kind of is that it depends question.
Yeah.
And that's why I think coming back to the mentor again, it's so important, because you could then go and bounce off your mentor and say, this is what I'm seeing. How do you think, are we at the right stage to maybe have a conversation around how do we grow and expand further?
So Kerry actually has answered your question. The checklist says get a mentor. There you go, sorted. So I just want to go back to the people comment that you made, because there's quite an interesting nuance to that and the question of right sizing. Because often when you start off in business, you tend to have a collection of people in the business as you start that are connected into the business for a whole variety of reasons. They are subject matter experts, for example. They might be people that you know, that you trust, and therefore they're part of your business. And then as the business grows, sometimes your need for those people actually doesn't enlarge, it actually decreases, because you're able to put systems and processes in place. I think specifically a classic example would be, I have this person who handles my accounting for me or my bookkeeping, whatever it may be, and now I have a whole department of people involved, and I actually have professional management involved. The reality of having that highly paid, trusted bookkeeper, because she or he did everything from A to Z, and they happened to be my aunt or uncle because I needed somebody that I could trust with my bank account, suddenly now diminishes, because now if I have to, let's call it right size the business, I need two creditors clerks and a debtors clerk, and I've got a run of the mill bookkeeper or accountant running with things, and I've got proper segregation of duties around controls over my accounts and bank accounts, etc. So now that, let's call it all the eggs in one basket type of person is no longer required, and actually if I'm right sizing my business, that role is now no longer needed. And I actually could exit that role from my business structure. So right-sizing, as you said earlier, about is it just about expansion? It's also about, let's call it, reshuffling some of the elements to get the right people in the right seats and doing the right stuff.
And I think it's understanding what are the skills you need at that point in time, and recognizing and having the courage to say, if it's not the right skill, I actually need to do something differently.
Yeah.
And that's often very difficult, because it is often family members or close friends that have been helping you. And they do have a role to play. But it's also that thing of when the business needs to shift and change, you may need to recognize that those people actually aren't going to be able to grow with you. And it might be a risk to actually keep them in your business, because they could actually start damaging some relationships and other things that cause the good skill that you actually need long term to actually leave your front door.
And there's the element of, if you've got those people in the business, there's often the perception of they've been here from the start, so they are the blessed or chosen ones. And so as a consequence of that, the professional team that you bring in afterwards may feel that they can't say what needs to be said, or that, you know, they can't express what needs to be done, because there's always this kind of, let's call it, historical hangover. I've seen that happen in a number of businesses, and you know, particularly generational businesses where parents and children are involved over a period of time. You know, you now get down 20 years, 30 years down the track, and you've got family members, you know, third generation family members involved. And suddenly now performance management is part of the company norm as the company has expanded. And then people start asking the question, but are you performance managing generation three the same way as you're performance managing any other employee? Do they get because they've got the same job as somebody else does.
Yeah.
Do they get special treatment? Don't they? And unfortunately, and I'm saying this straight, people always ask the question, how's this treated? But it's not always a question about, are you being lenient? In some cases, you actually are perceived to be tougher on that family member or whatever, because you're trying so hard to make it seem that they're treated the same. You know, it swings in both directions,
absolutely,
unfortunately. Now, I mean, we talked a lot about people. It seems, and what I haven't heard you talk a lot about is saying, well, get the right system to help you grow. It doesn't sound like, you know, it sounds like the let me call it, the softer side of this is fundamentally an area of focus for one. And I think, you know, my perception is that the world of systems and process has moved significantly over the years, and there are so many different options out there now. Is it difficult to find an environment or a system and information systems that can grow with your business, or are those dime a plenty?
I think there are some that are scalable, Rich, but I think, you know, it's always difficult. It so much depends on the company, the industry, and what's going to work for you. And then I think a lot of the basic, like, financial systems are very scalable because they've been designed that way.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of others aren't always.
Okay.
And so even when you first choose those systems in your business, you need to ask the question is, how scalable are they?
Yeah.
Because it may get to a point where actually that system that you purchased initially, which looked like a great idea, can only cater for the first 1,000 customers.
Yeah.
Which means that once you reach that limit, you actually have no choice but to choose something else.
Mm.
I think today it's a lot.
In particular, if you've built your world around that capability.
Yeah. And I think today a lot of systems are scalable, but we're also seeing a lot of companies, you know, they very much have to tailor a system to what they do at the same time. It doesn't always give you the solution you're looking for.
Mm.
And if you've tailored any kind of system significantly, you're actually not in a position usually to upgrade it all that easily.
Yeah, I think you can ask some of the big banks the challenges of that. You start tinkering with the baseline, thinking that you can grow and, you know, customize it on the fly, and the next minute, you know, all things are problematic.
You know, as I'm listening to both of you speak, something is just like it's a big red light that's going off, and it sounds like an obvious thing. And I know that large businesses spend a lot of time on this, but I'm not sure that small businesses spend as much time on it. But it's becoming clear about what you want to achieve in the long run.
Mm.
It's almost like a precursor, because that thing that you want to achieve is going to override or be the undercarriage of who you seek counsel from, where you're going to invest, how you're going to grow your business, what systems you're going to choose in the long run. So it's almost to me as if you've got to have permanent clarity. And as a small business owner, the one thing I never have is clarity, because you get caught up in the busyness of the business.
I think, Safia, it's that challenge that they always say, it's working in your business versus working on your business.
Yeah.
And often as small business owners, we spend so much time in the business because we want to create the right culture. We want to have the right values. We want to give the right customer service.
Yeah.
We forget to work on the business. Yeah. And on the business is, what is our long-term goal?
Mm. Mm.
Do we want to have 40 employees 10 years from now? Do we want to have 400? It's a very different philosophy and how you're going to get there.
Yeah.
And I think the risk is you can spend so much time in the details sometimes that you never step back and lift your head up and go, well, actually, what's going on in my industry? Am I still leading? Yeah. Am I falling behind? Do we really have a good product or service that we could get out there and market efficiently, that we could be a 400 strong company in the next 5 years? And I think so many people, that's often where they make a fatal error, is they spend so much time in the business, there's actually never time to grow it, because you're too involved in the day-to-day running of it to actually step back. Because often as the founder or the person who created the business, You're actually the only one who can make that decision.
Yeah. While you're busy fighting the fires.
Yes.
Yeah, and I think just to that point, I think we mustn't forget that there is firefighting that happens in any business, and in every business, in fact, I'm so bold to say. And the balance of expansionary vision versus today's crisis is actually also a key part of any conversation. And if you allow one to supplant the other, you've potentially got a problem. You've got to learn to walk and chew gum the same time on this one. Because if you are total expansion focused, the reality is you'll have something going wrong in the here and now that's really going to upset the apple cart. And by the same token, if you have no visionary expansion, you will find yourself
stuck
in the rut year after year and wondering why your business isn't growing. I mean, Kerry, in short, you've spoken about what tells you your business is ready to expand. Perhaps let me flip that around for you and ask a question. What are the warning signs that you're perhaps expanding too fast? And because I think there's this, you know, there are two types of people in the world, those that need to be pushed in an expansionary space and those that are just running and you're kind of going, because I mean, and the reason I'm asking this question is I think, in for example, in some businesses, there may be parties that say, let's expand, let's grow, let's do this. Mm. Kind of where do you say, okay, guys, we've grown fast enough or we're growing fast enough? I was reading a book recently, I can't recall the title, where they talked about you know, a 20% sustainable growth rate year on year in good years and in bad years.
Yeah.
And the whole point was you've got to be able to make sure that you can grow when there's no growth, but when there's huge growth, you still need to be, you need to be able to temper growth so that it doesn't get ahead of you and you effectively run out of juice. You know, how do you know if you're growing too quickly?
I think one of the real risks there is that you're struggling to actually produce cash. So you're taking on a lot of new business, which might mean, let's say if you're manufacturing something, you're producing a lot of product, but it's not actually being collected because you didn't actually put the skills in place. You know, you focused only on one aspect of growth. So it's also about balance. You can't grow only a sales team or the sale of services and products and not grow your operational experience and expertise and your financial team, because they are often the ones who have to collect the money. And without cash flow, most businesses fail. So often even growing businesses can run into cash flow challenges. So I think it's, if you are consistently seeing that, you need to ask yourself the question of are we growing too fast, or is it bad processes in our business that we haven't addressed because we were still running every other process like a 5-man team and we're now 40. I think also you can grow too fast and not have the right people on board to actually help your business. So if you're seeing certain areas become a bit of a challenge, and often it is to do with areas that aren't your expertise as the founder, and you might be the ideas guy and the product guy. So if you don't have a good ops person who can actually manage the processes and make sure the customer experience is right, or a finance person who's going to make sure the money's collected and cash flow is managed, well, yeah, you might go and sell a lot, but if no one else can deliver, you might be growing too fast only on one aspect. So I think it's also about looking at tempered growth across all areas of your business and not saying, well, let's just go and get a whole lot of new customers and once they arrive, we'll see what happens. Because that often means you don't deliver or you mess up on orders. And the risk is they don't order again. So what looked like growth actually was like a one-hit wonder kind of thing.
I think for me, the one thing that's always prevalent right across many conversations we have is that consistency in business is a key.
Yes.
And, you know, let's call it the chopping, changing and flicking around, whilst it might be considered responsiveness by some people, it's fine to be respond to a change or whatever, but you've got to be able to sustain that response. And consistency in any customer experience, and let's go back to what pays the bill, ultimately it's what the customer experiences. And if that isn't right on the nail, well, that growth that you're planning on or looking at is just probably not going to happen and is a fundamental challenge. Well, Kerry, it's been great having you with us in studio. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, Richard.
It's always interesting as one thinks about growth and prosperity, but you've got to make sure that you're managing all those risks and all of the elements. So thank you for highlighting that for us. Safs, do you have your checklist now?
So for me, it is that as a business owner, you've got to be perspective taking all the time.
Perspective, having the right outlook is critical. So thanks for those insights. That was Kerry Boucher, our guest in studio. Thank you very much for your time, Kerry. Next up is our business conversation. Stay with us. CliffCentral.com.